CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. Berlin, in the headlines across the European editorial pages. For example, London, Ukraine to receive 100 Leopard 2 tanks if Germany agrees deal. London again, the pink newspaper, the Financial Times. Poland asks Germany for permission to send Leopard tanks to Ukraine. Move increases pressure on Chancellor Olaf Scholz to bolster Kyiv's fight against Russian forces. And Bloomberg out of New York, but the Bloomberg Europe. Poland requests German permission to send tanks to Ukraine. There are sub-stories here, but I go immediately to Berlin. Judy Dempsey, the editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe for the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, anticipating the scale of this dispute several days ago when we spoke of the challenge for the Chancellor Scholz coalition government in Berlin. It's necessary to understand how Germany governs itself, to understand why this is a debate, would always be a debate, the nature of coalitions. Judy, a very good day to you in Berlin. I begin with the question of Leopard 2, but the larger question, as you've written in a recent column, is not the Ministry of Defense, which requires some reforming, not the new Minister of Defense or the former Minister of Defense. It comes to the Chancellor himself, Olaf Scholz, whom you identified last week as ambivalent. Is that still the case? Is that why there's the word if in these headlines? Good day to you.
Good day to you, John, and thank you for having me on your show. It's not a question of ambivalence or if. This Chancellor is so risk averse. He is so afraid to be the first because he thinks Russia will retaliate. He is so afraid of his past. And the real problem is that from my sources, that he's surrounded by his own kind of people that confirm his views and he will not take or consider outside advisors. This is a real serious situation for Germany at a time when it should be really taking the leadership.
My confusion about the politics is here. The Green Party now looks to be the most hawkish in the coalition. The Social Democrats, the most dovish. And then there is the financial community led by Christian Lindner. Are these three separate positions now about joining in the defense of Europe, or is it all on the Social Democrats to convince themselves that armament is necessary for Germany to lead? I can't quite decide where the reluctance is.
Well, I wouldn't blame you. Hawkish is a very kind of old-fashioned word these days, especially for the Greens, who used to be pacifist, but there's a realistic wing and a pragmatic wing inside the Greens. But the point is, this is about the future stability of Europe, the future security of Europe, and what kind of influence Russia would have if it did win in Ukraine. These are the big stakes. These are the big stakes of reordering the post-Cold War era. And Chancellor Scholz never refers to this, never refers to these big issues. The Greens understand it. I think the Liberal Democrats understand this as well. That's the first point. And secondly, the Social Democrats, they're nostalgic for Russia. Are they pacifists? Are they anti-American? Are they this, that, and the other? Are they anti-war? Well, everybody's anti-war, but when it comes to the defense of what is very important, you have to shift the goalposts, and Chancellor Scholz is not willing to do this at the moment.
What is the immediate story is Germany giving permission for Leopard 2 tanks associated with the German Ministry of Defense, giving permission to Poland to send its Leopard 2 tanks to Ukraine. I believe that other countries could ask as well, because there are a lot of Leopard 2 tanks. Germany's done very well selling these tanks across Europe. So that seems very diplomatically neat that Poland receives permission. Is that a risk to Chancellor Scholz for Poland to do this? Would he be faulted by his party just as much as if he is sending the tanks?
This is a very important question. Germany, as the manufacturer of these tanks, do not want to be the first to send these tanks, because this is their psychological, emotional, historical perception of what Russia will think. They don't want to be the first, right. Even though it is the most leading economy in Europe, and you would imagine they have the spunk and the integrity and the courage to do this. But They won't. So eventually, they're probably, given the pressure, they will give the permission to Finland and to Poland and to other countries to send these tanks. I often wonder why they sell these tanks to its European allies, when the European allies cannot use them except for their own defence. But until recently, against whom was this defence about?
The meeting in Germany over the last several days at Rammstein, the gathering of war eagles and diplomats, did that produce news that was positive for the chancellor, that there's a conference going on and Germany gets to have a voice in it? Is that all positive direction, or did that underline German reluctance? I can't read it from here.
I wouldn't blame you. We've had one or two of these conferences before in Rammstein, instigated by the United States. Frankly, Germany came out very badly on this. They gave no clear signals. The new defense minister, Boris Pistorius, wasn't quite sure which brief he should read from. Why? Because he doesn't have the power. At the end of the day, the Chancellor, Olaf Scholz, decides on which tanks and which military material should be sent to Ukraine. That's the first point. The second thing is that Lloyd Austin, the US Defense Secretary, and Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, they were far from happy with Scholz's ambivalence and dithering and hiding behind the United States. Oh, you send the Abrams first and then we will do this, that and the other. And it's been an astonishing setback for Germany's role in Europe and its actual relationship with the United States. I must say the Biden administration has not done the Trump issue of just lambasting Germany. It's been very careful on this and the phone calls go back and forth. But Germany has done itself no favours and Chancellor Scholz hasn't given the leadership of the integrity that is needed at a time when Europe's stability and security is being threatened every single day.
A question about how foreign policy works in Germany. In America, as you know, our foreign policy is secondary to our domestic policy when it comes to political polling, voting at election time, or choosing candidates. In fact, it's often said that American foreign policy is only an extension of domestic policy. Is that the same in Germany? In other words, can Chancellor Scholz enjoy the popularity that put him into office because of his domestic programs, quite aside from his decision about Leopard 2 tanks or the defense of Europe?
No, this is very different now because foreign policy and Russia's war on Ukraine is so linked up to Germany's energy policy. It's so linked up to how Germany was so dependent on Russian energy. It's so linked up to how Germany has now had to quit the Russian gas pipelines. It is so linked up to the standard of living, to perceptions of foreign policy, security policy, defense policy. It should all come together. It's not coming together, but sooner or later, it'll all come in, the domestic and the foreign. But there's no doubt that at this stage of the war, it's nearly a year old, and might I add, it started in 2014, that the foreign policy and the domestic policies are now affecting each other. And foreign policy is becoming a big issue in the German public debate, not just among think tanks, but among the citizens. You know, why is there this war? How are we going to deal with Russia? How are we going to get peace? Why is Scholz not delivering on the Leopard tanks?
One more attempt to understand Chancellor Scholz's hesitation. France, at least the president of France, Mr. Macron, is now indicating that it chooses to rearm and enhance its defense business, spending a whole lot of money. Germany and France have been in competition, alliance, and war for several hundred years. Does the Macron remark bolster Olaf Scholz's attempts to take control of this, in other words, overcome his party's reluctance, or does it make it more complicated for him? France is doing this, but we're going to remain at peace. I can't understand how these two countries work together.
These countries work together because they are so different. And leaving aside the history and all the animosities and all the wars, they are so fundamentally different. Germany is the economic powerhouse of Europe, despite all its weaknesses of how it structures its economy. France is the military hard power of Europe, and it has quite a unstructured, very old-fashioned economy. So you have these two diametrically opposed systems, and they have managed to get together. Thus is one element. The second element is that President Macron's vision of Europe is much more integrationist, much more European-centric, much more less American, NATO-based. The German one is, I wish I knew how to give you an answer, it's cautious. They want their cake and eat it. They want the security umbrella from NATO. Yes, they will contribute. But at the same time, their interests are their national interests. It's economic interests, no matter where it is throughout the world. And so that's the number one priority in the German DNA, whereas the French priority is stability, the military component, the military necessity and security and defence necessity. The fact that they could work together for 60 years when the Elysee Treaty brought them together is quite remarkable. But now it has come to a standstill and they have to move forward. The Russia war in Ukraine demands a new structure of the Franco-German relationship that will affect the future of Europe.
I'm speaking with Judy Dempsey, the editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe, which is an online publication. You're welcome to our request from the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, Berlin at the center of an unresolved conflict over rearming or arming Ukraine to defend itself and perhaps to go on the offense in the spring. It's all very unclear. We're going to turn to a much larger story, however, one that is guaranteed to remain in the news beyond Ukraine, beyond the European war, which is, does the EU want, has the EU achieved something called strategic autonomy? That means not ask the US first. I'm John Mash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.